You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Eric Newman. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including student protests at Cal Poly Humboldt and nurses picketing at Providence in Medford. I'm here with reporters Roman Battaglia and Jane Vaughn. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey there.
Roman, we're going to start with you. You covered a few big things this week. Earlier in the week, you followed the conclusion of an anti-war protest at Cal Poly Humboldt in Arcata. What happened there?
Yeah, so protesters had been, protests have been happening against the war in Gaza for about a week. Students had been occupying a couple buildings on campus, and they'd kind of been camping out in the quad area. And what happened this week is police were sent out on campus early Tuesday morning to arrest the protesters and clear out the buildings they were occupying early, as in like 2:30 in the morning. According to the university, police from all over the state came. You know, they were led by the sheriff's office and university police. Kelby McIntosh, who's our reporter down in Humboldt, was at Cal Poly Humboldt that morning when police arrived. He was there on Monday night for a rally that was being held. There were at least 100 people there kind of rallying in support of these protesters, but police weren't there at the rally. Then they cleared out for the night, except for the people that were occupying the buildings, and then Kelby said that he heard police coming to campus that night and went there around 1 in the morning. They surrounded the protesters at the campus and began arresting people at around 2:30 in the morning. 25 people were arrested. The university says charges could include unlawful assembly, vandalism, assault to police officers, things like that. Students and university employees could also face discipline. We heard that an assistant professor was also arrested, and according to some news outlets, he released a statement saying he was going on a hunger strike until the rest of the protesters were released. A TV reporter was also arrested during this whole thing, but she was later released without any charges. You could even watch the live stream on Facebook that she was streaming while she was being arrested and hear her yelling for her manager that she was being arrested and needed help. So yeah, a lot of craziness going on there.
So this is far from the only campus protest happening right now, although it was kind of one of the earlier ones. So just give us some background about what these protests were about.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, they're protesting the war that's happening in Gaza between Israel and Hamas. They took over Siemens Hall here specifically on Monday, last Monday, which is home to the school's business college and some administrative offices, including the president's office. They actually had a lot of support from community members, students and faculty, who would kind of show up to the campus after it was shut down. The protesters themselves, like the protesters around the country, have been demanding a few things that include that the universities divest from companies that do business in Israel, no charges against the protesters, and public calls for a ceasefire in Gaza. The Cal Poly Humboldt administration eventually responded to those demands, but you know, their answers didn't really seem to fit what the protesters were looking for. Like they said, we don't, you know, based on our investments, we don't really have a lot in Israel, and we're willing to talk about that in the future. And also, they're not willing to drop any charges because what the protesters did is illegal. You know, the university eventually enforced a hard closure of the campus, and that's what kind of led to the arrests and clearing out. Like you said, you know, there's a lot of protests that have been happening on university campuses. Some happened after Cal Poly Humboldt at the University of Oregon and Portland State University. And we also just saw that, you know, police cleared out the Portland State Library yesterday that protesters had been occupying for a number of days. Mm-hmm.
So the Cal Poly Humboldt University president, Tom Jackson, was pretty quiet last week about this whole situation. Did he say anything about the protests?
Yeah, he finally made a couple of statements after the protest was cleared out. In a letter he sent to the university community on Wednesday, him and some of the other leadership basically said that while they support students' right to protest, they can't tolerate what happened with the occupation of these buildings and the illegal acts. They said that the campus is going to remain closed at least through the end of the school year, which is next week, and there's going to be plans for graduation ceremonies to take place off campus instead. You know, the president has come under fire from numerous groups during this protest, including faculty and community members. We had heard earlier that the staff assembly overwhelmingly approved a vote of no confidence in the president, and they called for his resignation. Faculty also said that he made the decision to close the campus and move all of the classes online without consulting any of the faculty. We also had seen last week there was a public letter from some elected city, county, and tribal officials that basically said there was little involvement by the president with community leaders during this protest, despite all the national attention they were receiving. So he's faced a lot of flack.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, thanks for giving us some updates on what happened there. We're next going to turn to another story that you finished up this week. It was a story about a packed field of candidates in the Klamath County Sheriff's race and how an ethics investigation plays into things. So a lot went into the reporting in this story. So we're going to first listen to it, and then you can tell us a little bit more about your reporting.
In a packed auditorium at a Klamath Falls church, seven men sit behind a table at the front of a crowd. Each of them are vying to be the next sheriff of Klamath County.
I'm Darren Craig.
My name is Sean Ferns.
Good evening. Brian Bryson. It's great.
My name is Shane Mitchell.
My name is Mike Shepard, and thank you for coming. My name is Ryan Gaber.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Billy Strickland.
Like any debate, the candidates take jabs at each other, but this race comes with some extra baggage. Sergeant Ryan Gaber, for example, is the son of the current sheriff, who announced he wouldn't run again earlier this year. He says that some of the people running are doing it because they don't like the current status quo.
Ferns said that we're all friends up here. That's not true. There are men that I won't go through the door with that are part of this campaign.
It was a public dispute between the sheriff and the county commissioners late last year that led to a flood of candidates in this race.
I think everybody's tired of all of the negative news reports about our office and the embarrassment that's been brought to our deputies.
That's candidate Darren Craig at his home in Klamath Falls. Craig runs the Marine Division at the sheriff's office, where he's been for 19 years. Craig also unsuccessfully ran against the current sheriff in 2020. He says he's the only one that's been brave enough to speak out against the controversy under Sheriff Chris Gaber since he's taken office.
Truthfully, I think there are a number of people who file to run because they're terrified that I'm going to be successful and that their type of behavior will not be tolerated or acceptable and there will be no place for it.
Craig says he's seen many acts of nepotism by the sheriff when dealing with his two sons who also work at the department. Everything culminated late last year in an investigation over the reassignment of Chris Caber's son Ryan to a position without opening the job to other applicants. As a result, the county commissioners revoked an agreement they made with the Caber family and threatened to fire his two sons. Ryan Gaber believes the complaints and the ensuing scandals because of political motivations by fellow candidates and others to tarnish the reputation of the office.
The sheriff's office has been painted into a light to the public as though that they're delegitimized. They're unable to provide the services or that somehow it's the sheriff's office's fault.
Ryan Gaber has worked at the sheriff's department since 2008. When asked what the biggest issue is at the sheriff's office, he says it's the ongoing fight for the independence of the department from the rest of the county. He says the sheriff's office has given in to the county commissioners too much.
In the interest of going along to get along, the intermingling between the Board of County Commissioners and the sheriff's office has brought us to this point. It's reached a breaking point.
Ryan Gaber says that county commissioners should have no say in the employees at the sheriff's department, and agreeing to follow county policies to avoid a conflict of interest between the sheriff and his sons back in 2018 was a mistake. Gaber and the current sheriff are supported by one of the other candidates, Jail Commander Billy Stripling. Stripling says he gets along well with the sheriff and thinks there are just a few issues wrong with the office and he's the best person to fix them.
We got a bunch of people that say they have the sheriff's office is in the forefront of their mind and they really care about the sheriff's office, but all they talk is negativity.
Two other candidates come from outside the sheriff's office and believe an outside view is what's needed right now. Sean Ferns was a sheriff's deputy many years ago, but moved to the Klamath Falls Police Department before retiring last year.
I am not part of the problem that's going on. Anyone and everyone that is running, I believe they have an agenda for themselves, and I don't, because I'm coming from the outside in. I have nothing to gain. I have nothing to lose.
One of the main concerns about the department has been the sheriff's supervision of his own family. Ferns says the sheriff's office should act more like a family, but one without favoritism.
When you're putting your life on the line and you're needing to rely on somebody to do something, otherwise somebody can get seriously hurt or killed, it's got to be a family because, we're all part of the blue and we're all family.
The three other candidates, Mike Shepard, Brian Bryson, and Shane Mitchell, did not respond to requests for interviews. Ballots will begin heading to voters at the beginning of May and are due on May 21st. If nobody gets a majority of the vote, then the top two candidates will advance to the general election in November. That's a likely scenario, says Craig, because of the amount of candidates running. There are people running who believe the sheriff's office is fine and needs to rebuild trust, those who think the current leadership needs to be replaced, and those who want to see someone from the outside take over. The outcome of this election could result in very different visions for the future of the Klamath County Sheriff's Office. Roman Battaglia, JPR News.
Okay, so ballots have just started heading to Oregon voters for the primary election on May 21st that, Roman, your story was kind of giving us a look forward towards. So why is this election in Klamath County important?
Yeah, I mean, my ballot is literally arriving today. I just found out. This is obviously important because it's going to shape the future of Klamath County and especially the sheriff's office. Like I said in the story, you know, there's a lot of different visions for how that's going to go and, you know, how the relationship between the sheriff and the county commissioners is going to look like in the future. You know, when we talked to Ryan Kaber, he said that, you know, he essentially sees that fighting against the county commissioners in the future is going to be the biggest priority for him and, like, determining the sheriff's office's independence, whereas that's going to be different for some of the other candidates. So, you know, I talked to there's a lot of divisive opinions here and thoughts about each other. I talked to some of the candidates who said they wouldn't work at the sheriff's office if the other candidate wins. There's also just have a lot of attention from the voters on social media about who's going to, you know, who's the best candidate and who's going to do the best for the county. So I think that's just why this is just an important race to cover.
Okay. So what went into your story on these candidates running for sheriff?
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of research. I first started by doing some background research on the candidates. I found some old news articles, employment history, you know, court records, things like that, that I could find to kind of help paint a picture of the people running. And then I did, you know, some research on past articles that were written about the race. I've obviously reported on the sheriff's stuff for a while, so I kind of know about the ethics issues, and then obviously reaching out to the candidates to talk. Some of them didn't respond, sadly, but, you know, I tried to make sure I could talk to as many of them as I could to get a full picture of this race.
Mm-hmm. And I know there was a lot of documents and, like you said, background research that you did before this. Any other things that are especially important that didn't make it into the final piece?
Yeah, I mean, we did have to leave a lot out. I think that part of that is just because there's going to be another election probably in November with the top two candidates, so we have more time to look into them. I think one thing that I didn't include was a letter posted online by Andy Nichols, who used to work at the Sheriff's Department and he's now running for Klamath County Commissioner. In this letter, he kind of really ripped into Sheriff Chris Kaber. He brought up a lot of concerns about this letter that the sheriff had an attorney write to send to county commissioners while this ethics scandal was going on. Late last year, he said, quote, he is blinded by the love of his children and the situation got out of hand. And he basically said, you know, he's not promoting any one candidate, but he specifically said that Ryan Kaber, who's the sheriff's son, is not fit to be sheriff. So I think there were some things like that that were not included in the story that just couldn't make it because of time or we didn't have enough time to get into it. But maybe in the future.
Gotcha. Well, we'll definitely be following that when the election comes around. Jane, we're going to turn to you now. You covered a picketing event that took place in our region by healthcare workers this week. Tell us what happened.
So that was a picket that was done by nurses in Providence, at Providence in Medford, and that was on Wednesday afternoon. There are 400 nurses there that are represented by the Oregon Nurses Association, and this was what they call an informational picket, so they weren't striking or walking out, but they were trying to bring attention to their demands. They've been negotiating with Providence since January. Their contract expired in March, and there's still no new contract written, so that's why they were picketing.
Okay, so this happened on May 1st, which is coincidentally International Workers' Day in many parts of the world. What are the demands of these folks at Providence?
So they're asking for more paid time off and higher wages, better health benefits. They're also asking for better nurse-to-patient ratios, so there's a press release from the Oregon Nurses Association, or ONA, and they say that during meal periods, there can be as many as 8 patients assigned to a nurse, which they say is too many. So the nurses themselves proposed an average 30% wage increase in the first year of a new contract, followed by a 9% raise in the second year and an 8.5% raise in the third year. So they're arguing that Providence's wages are just not competitive in the region. On the other side, Providence's proposal was a 14% wage increase, and then no bargaining has occurred since Providence made that proposal. I talked to Providence Medford Chief Nursing Officer Kate Kitchell, and she says they want to keep negotiating, but no further bargaining has occurred since then.
Okay, so that's going to do it for the debrief. We're going to have to cut things a little bit short today. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments about our coverage and suggestions for things that we should cover in the future through our news tip line. You can find that on our website at ijpr.org. You can find this program and many others on our website at jeffexchange.org, or you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms.